You're listening to the Johnny Hero Show here on U105, and pleased to say, making a return after a bit of a gap. This was one of the first interviews I did on U105. It's the boys from Bagatelle. How you doing, lads?
Very well, Johnny. Good to be here, and good to...
I know you're old fellas and all now, but we're talking about age, but you haven't changed. I don't think you've changed.
Well, I left the Zimmer frame outside the door.
Well, I've never found anything worth changing for.
Yeah. Are you as busy as ever?
Busy as ever, flying, thanks to the wonderful audience we have, which are incredible people. They have they've kept us rocking now for 35 years.
35 years? I mean, did you ever think when it started you were going to get this long out of it?
Absolutely not. I mean, it was day by day and week by week, and poverty stricken. If a gig came in, it was like, oh, it's a gig.
Are we going to break even? And you're still asking if McQuillan's involved, of course, you know.
Oh, yeah. I want to know, things took a big turn there, all right. Now we do less work. Yeah. Just kidding, Jim.
But Liam, at the time, you were one of the few bands who were brave enough to go out and play your own stuff as a set, didn't you?
Yeah, brave enough, is one way of saying it.
No, given that Ireland had a whole tradition of the show bands, if you know what I mean, and live venues.
It was something we wanted to do. Half the set was rhythm and blues and Bonnie Raitt and all that kind of stuff with a pre-made singer. And then we started to introduce original material. It was great for us to try it out. But it was a long time. It was a year and a half before we got the first round of applause for any original song. Because the people weren't, apart from Horse Lips maybe, and at the time then U2, maybe one or two other bands all started in 1978.
Yeah.
But there certainly wasn't any tradition of people with an Irish accent singing about Dublin or anything like that. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. I mean, you had to convert audiences as you went along. They weren't all sitting waiting on all this new material.
True enough, and our first album is so varied. There's country rock in it, there's blues, and there's ballads, and all sorts of things.
And even calypso type of.
Yeah. We just trying a shotgun approach, just trying caught on.
What everybody threw on the table.
And everybody came in from different backgrounds, so that everybody brought something different to the table, like jazz and blues and country and bluegrass. Everything was in the mix, you know?
Yeah.
Actually, it's a lesson to be learned, because when we threw everything on the table, then you can take off the table what you don't want. Whereas if you can be precious about it, there mightn't be enough material on the table.
Yeah, yeah, and then you're not left with an awful lot of choice anyway, you know.
But it's a lesson for a lot of bands, and we've learned it ourselves. Instead of trying to categorise the album, we're going to do it, this side's going to be all fast, and this side's going to be all ballads. It's a recipe for disaster, just throw everything in.
I mean, songs like Summer in Dublin, when you were getting the lyrics together, was there a specific scene in your head? Was it something that happened to you, or was it something that you were imagining?
No, a very specific day that really happened to myself, we were actually playing in Dunleary recently, after I don't know how many years, maybe 30 years, and we played across from where I used to live and wrote Summer in Dublin. So we had an amazing gig there 2 weeks ago in Dunleary. But it just happened to me one night. Very briefly, I went to see a band called the Boomtown Rats in a wee place in Dublin. And the next day, I was singing this Bob Seger song in my head all day. I nearly got run over by a bus in Dublin. I got my guitar. I'm down to Dunleary. That's the whole day.
Yeah.
Yeah. But nobody ever thought that'd be somebody singing about Dublin, you know.
Yeah.
Like, there was Pete St. John and people at Dublin in the Rare Old Times or... you know, things like that. They were more ballady. But to have a pop song with an orchestra backing...
No, exactly. As you said, if someone saw a song titled with the word Dublin, and they're going to think that's a traditional song. That's Diddley Dee kind of thing, you know? But as you said, it was a contemporary pop song.
But as Ken said, even our third album, then we brought in different influences, like the Paris song, Raining in Paris, and Phil Coulter was produced, and he was in the control room. And he came out and he says, "Who's playing the accordion?" And it was me rehearsing the French accordion thing.
Yeah.
But he didn't know that I'd won 3 All-Ireland titles for playing accordion, you know. So we'd accorded in it, and we'd obviously a lot more better accomplished musicians after our first 2 albums in a few years.
Oh, yeah.
And we had a few number ones under our belt. But it's always great fun going into the studio. It's a pity that the record recording industry has gone down the tubes, because it's great fun. The creative aspect of being in a studio, to me, is the most joyful part, apart from gigging, right?
Yeah.
But to go into a studio now and spend 4 weeks doing a CD for people downloaded for 99 cents is not an incentive.
Yeah, I know. Well, to be honest, and that's why the industry's kind of turned on its head. It used to be that people toured simply to sell CDs and sell albums.
Hmm.
Now you're touring to make the money, and the albums are nearly like an ad. Come to our gigs.
That's exactly it. In fact, you two, their latest single, they gave it for free.
Yeah.
And somebody gave a euro or a dollar or something like that for everyone that was sold to a charity, an AIDS charity.
Yeah.
Because it's with the downloading process, a lot of young bands, actually, I notice on the internet, all their music is free. Just download it, just to spread their name out there.
Well, exactly, using it as an advertisement. I remember Radiohead's last album, they put it out there and said, just give what you want. Give what you think it's worth.
Yeah. Unbelievable.
But notably, here are our tour dates.
Of course.
But the domino effect of that is that you've got music shops closing.
Yeah.
But your recording studio's closing.
Yeah.
Because nobody's going to go in for 4 weeks and spend 30 grand.
Yeah, doing an album that there's going to be no return on, really.
Whereas they'll do a video now which costs 100 grand and then go on the road.
Yeah.
Because as you said, you have to work there. And you get some acts like Elton John and some big acts that are combining with other artists to share the expenses.
Yeah.
I remember that we were some of the older guys that remember the time when your record company would give you like 3 grand each as an advance. They don't get them anymore.
That's right. Thank you for signing to our label. Here's money.
Yeah, used to do that. I couldn't believe it. I mean, the first time they hit us was we were in shock because, you know, we never knew they did. And they'd recoup it, obviously, from the royalties. But they had confidence enough they would get the money to actually give it to you, you know, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, our first manager took us off the road, cancelled all our gigs.
Right.
And got us an advance with the record company, not to gig, just to write.
Yeah.
And those days are over. We can't even get the bus fare now.
You couldn't do that.
We were writing, but we were very bored. You know the way you just love gigging and travelling and touring at the time.
But again, I still
love touring. But
a lot of your inspiration would come from the shows that you're doing and the people that you're meeting and all anyway.
You know? Oh, definitely, yeah.
That's right.
Listen, I've got to wrap up, lads, but you've mentioned the Nashville Songwriters Festival. You're at the Holiday Inn Thursday, 6th of March.
Mm.
Anton Clacken's on with you. Anton's a good guy. Talented
Anton
guy,
Anton is
too.
A great guy. I have to say, he's very, very helpful. Very great guy, actually. All-rounder. Brilliant.
So you're looking forward to that?
Very much.
Is it a straightforward gig, or is it one of the, are you going to be doing a workshop kind of thing at any? Because I know the Nashville thing, people do that, you know, you'll maybe stand and talk about your songwriting and everything else. Are you doing any of those?
No, we're not doing the workshops. We're just doing, they have us to do our set, if you know what I mean, with all the a concert situation, a seated concert in the Holiday Inn.
Well, that's good, and the stuff will be appreciated, you know.
Yeah.
Anything else coming up, lads? Any other gigs that we should know about?
Yeah, we have. We're going to be far-flung lands. We're going to be in Abu Dhabi. We're going to be in Riyadh in Saudi Arabia. We're going to be. Well, look at this list here now, right? The tickets are on. Sorry, I'll go into that in a minute. Sorry, my manager just handed me a brief here. Okay, we're in Canada, England, Scotland, USA, Macau, Dubai, Abu Dhabi.
Rules off the tongue.
No, we've been to most of them before, but this Canada's a new place because so many people have gone away.
Okay, yeah, and it continues.
The only positive thing about immigration is for bands like ourselves and Aslan, and that is you actually get out to...
You have a ready audience.
You go out to play for, because they want a taste of home. Yeah. Like when Liam sings Summer in Dublin when we're away in places, it can be a very emotional outpouring from the audience because they won't be going home, but for that few minutes, they're at home.
Boys, thanks for coming in.
Johnny, thank you very much. Thank you. Thanks to the audience.